Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1264, we present four stories by new Life Rattle writer, Rory Bourgeois. Rory Bourgeois was born in 1992 in St. Catharines, Ontario. His two sisters are 5 and 15 years older than him. Rory's father works on ships, and his mother is a nurse. Rory, a third-year political science major in university, enjoys playing hockey, drinking, and jokes. In the series we feature on tonight's program, our narrator grapples with individuality and becoming a man. With writing at once humorous and deadly serious, Rory's stories examine the different faces of masculinity. In tonight's first story, we meet our narrator in high school, where his planned performance for friends is preempted by a teacher unwilling to tolerate any classroom theatrics. Let's listen now as Rory Bourgeois reads his story, Fond of Trouble, tonight on Life Rattle.
Fond of Trouble by Rory Bourgeois. Rory, you may re-enter the classroom now. I want you on your best behavior. I nod and walk towards my enemy, Mrs. Passfield. She's a large, red-headed woman who wears glasses and excess makeup. Her arms jiggle when she writes on the chalkboard. I drag my hand across the orange lockers in the hallway as I approach the door. I hold a binder in my right hand containing all the books and notes from every class. This binder is well over capacity, but I enjoy the simplicity of keeping all my things in one place. I'm excited to be back in the spotlight. Mr. Hansinger's grade 8 students pack our classroom for the next hour, a rare opportunity to be surrounded by all my friends at once. I'm stuck in Mrs. Passfield's grade 7-8 split class with a bunch of stupid kids. I'm bitter. The other four grade 8 students in my class are okay, but I don't hang out with them at recess. In confidentiality at the start of the school year, my favorite teacher, Miss Downs, explained the reason for separating me from my friends. We had to split you, Max, and Evan up. We had meetings about it. You guys were a terror. You're impossible to teach. You're stuck in the split class because of the three of you. You work the best independently. So I was placed in Miss Passfield's class because I'm the smartest of the three stooges. Great. I see a spot beside Max and I walk over, eager and smiling. I can tell the class is waiting for me to do something funny, but I decide to delay my antics. I drop my enormous binder on the table and the bang is louder than I expected. The class chuckles and I feel a selfish joy. "Rory, go to the office," Mrs. Passfield shouts. "What the hell? I didn't do anything." I know she hates it when I say hell, and for this very reason, I've become infatuated with the word. "Don't swear in my classroom," Mrs. Passfield shouts again. "Go see Miss Barron." My audience giggles, but I'm upset. I storm down to the office. I sit in my throne at the entrance. The secretary doesn't even bother to ask. I hear her buzz to Miss Barron. "Rory is here to see you." I stare out the teal doors at my right. I want to go home. I sink into my seat and fiddle with my hands. Miss Barron, a small woman, who also has red hair and wears glasses, calls me in. She looks to be near retirement age. I enter her office and stare at her "Bang Head Here" sign. She probably had me in mind when she bought it. I sit down in the red chair in front of her desk. "Mrs. Passfield told me you were acting up in her class," she says. "I didn't do anything. I put my binder down. It's heavy," I plead. "You purposely slammed the binder. This isn't your first incident," she says. I roll my eyes. "You're going to need to serve an in-school suspension for the rest of the day. You know where to go." I try and act frustrated, but this is actually my favorite punishment. I don't have to sit through class. Near the gym, in a closet, sits a large wooden desk. I take my seat and lay my binder down and use it as a pillow. I look at the clock. In 20 minutes, I can go home. I look at my name, carved in the top right corner of the desk, from a previous in-school suspension. I fold my arms over my binder, lay my forehead on my forearms, and think about Jessica Brent. I doze off.
That was Fond of Trouble, written and read by Rory Bourgeois. Our second story is a snapshot scene of a young man in the company of his entirely female family, where he strains to maintain an exaggeratedly male voice. Let's listen now as Rory Bourgeois reads his story, No Longer the Youngest.
No Longer the Youngest by Rory Bourgeois. I feel uncomfortable as I hold the newest member of my family. The thing was born a few weeks ago, on Valentine's Day, and still remains useless. They call it Riley. I'm 15 years old, and Riley belongs to my 30-year-old sister, Stacy. She and her wife stand in the room, not letting the baby leave their sight. My mother and my 20-year-old sister, Jessie, huddle around me, staring at the baby and lying about its beauty. We stand in front of couches in the living room. I'm trying to hold the baby the same way my mother did, but it feels awkward. Even Jessie looked comfortable. They all have their eyes locked on me as I hold the fresh piece of human in my left arm, cradled like a football. "Isn't she adorable?" my mom says. "They're so precious." I smile, instead of pointing out that it looks like an alien. Jessie adjusts my left arm so that the baby has more support. I stare down at its enormous, misshapen, bald head and its tiny, boneless-looking body. It squints back, as if exhausted from all the sleeping and crying it's done today. "I can take her if you want," Stacy says, noticing I'm still not yet fond of her kid. "Yeah, take her," I reply. I'm happy to get rid of the baby. I prop it up with both of my hands under its armpits, and I walk over to Stacy. I take a few steps, and my foot gets stuck in the base of the rocking horse. I trip. As I fall, I spin. I still hold the baby in the air, and bravely let my back hit the ground. The baby laughs. Everyone else panics. "Oh no, are you okay?" my mother shouts as she nears Riley. Stacy grabs her baby and says, "Jesus, Rory!" Her wife, Angel, stands back and says, "You've got to be kidding me." "What is wrong with you?" Jessie asks. "What was going through your head?" I remain on my back, the baby no longer in my arms. Awesome. Maybe now I won't have to hold the thing again.
Our third story tonight opens on a scaffold over a highway in southern Ontario, where our narrator struggles to find his place amongst his fellow crewmen at a road construction job site. Let's listen now as Rory Bourgeois reads Between Roads.
Between Roads by Rory Bourgeois. I sit at the top of a hastily built scaffold beside the belly of a bridge. Tom, my co-worker and roommate, works inside the attached metal tunnel. I'm on hole watch, watching a hole. The phone in my pocket waits for me to connect with my friends and family. I know it's unprofessional. Despite the hot sun and lack of stimulation, I do my best to stay alert. Yet I sit bored while Tom suffocates in a confined space and finishes the last touch-ups on a paint job. He may have a violent temper, but Tom, in his mid-40s, comes across as the most level-headed of the crew. The night before, as we lay on beds side by side in our motel room, Tom told me about how learning anger management had changed his life. "I used to hang around with the wrong crowd on the streets of Hamilton. If you saw me at 20, you probably would have crossed the street to avoid me. I played Tetris in my University of Toronto sweater as he told me about how he was forced to get his temper under control. It all boiled over when I was around 20, when I came home to the neighbor fucking my wife. I lost it on the kid, I pushed him off a second-story balcony. Yikes. At least it wasn't unprovoked. I spent 8 years in a maximum security prison with the toughest anger management you can imagine, and it really did change the way I see life. Below the scaffold, a narrow grassy field separates the lanes of Highway 402. I'm somewhere near Sarnia, fixing a bridge over the highway that gets used maybe twice a day. The persistent buzzing of cars on the highway is loud, and my platform shakes with each passing truck. On top of all of this, I can hear the rumbling of the enormous power generator. Three workers, men I have very little in common with, stand at the bottom of the scaffold. I had been excited to find out I'd be working with a 21-year-old named Mike. He's only 1 year older than me. But I quickly find out that we have nothing in common. Minutes after meeting Mike, he opened up by saying, "It's tough work, I hate it, but it's good money, so I'll probably be doing it for the rest of my life." I feel uncomfortable around someone who sounded so hopeless at an age when we're the most optimistic. But he was right about the money. The head supervisor is a grizzly, heavy-set old man with a heart condition. It became apparent immediately that everything he learned had been through trial and error, as literacy was not his forte. During the second week of work, he had approached me with a bizarre question, written on a sheet of paper, asking which one of these words was the correct spelling of scientific. S-E-I-N-T-I-F-I-C, S-I-A-N-T-I-F-I-C, S-I-E-N-T-I-F-I-Q, S-I-E-N-T-I-F-I-Q-U-E. I was surprised and respectfully wrote scientific on the paper. The supervisor, though, is basically a good man and a good teacher. His son, Eric, short and around 30 years old, and who also works on the crew, seems to be a bitter man. He speaks poorly about every crew member, and I'm well aware that he attacks my character the most. Every day after work, the four of them get together and smoke weed. They start toking from when the shift ends until they go to bed. I hate it. I have a gym membership in a nearby town, and after work I exercise, then come back to the motel and go to bed. This routine appears to alienate me from the group, but this may not be such a bad thing. As I sit at the top of the scaffold, I hear Eric on the ground, through all the noise, yell to his father. Then I hear my name said a few times and see Eric point at me. Uh-oh. My gut drops as I try to guess my misdeed. Tom emerges out of the hole, and I climb down the ladder to defend myself. "This fucking goof left me in there. He left me alone to do work in the hole," Eric shouts. "I fucking told him to come and help. He nodded and then he left." Oops. We are forced to wear gas masks in the hole, and since we're at the top of the highway, it's also very noisy. When he mumbled through the gas masks, I thought Eric was telling me to do something else, so I nodded and left. "He only got this fucking job because of his dad. He doesn't belong here," Eric yells. "Every night he leaves and cries to his mom on the phone. He's a fucking baby. Why does he even show up? He just fucks the dog all day." I slowly move toward him. I've had enough of this stupid job. They all seem to have a prison mentality, and fighting seems to be the only answer. I inch closer, fists clench, and stare him in the eye. Eric screams about everything he thinks he knows about me. I consider my options. In the worst case scenario, I'll be fired. Fired from a job I want to quit. In the best case scenario, I'll earn respect from the crew. As he continues to yell, I see Eric move back. I'm about 20 pounds heavier. Then I realize he won't fight me. He finishes his rant and says, "Fuck you, fuck off, fucking goof," and storms off. Eric leaves me alone with the boss, sitting in the shit pile of words he just built. Nothing has changed. I'm still at the bottom of the pecking order. I will wake up at 6 tomorrow morning and return to the same spot and face the same temper tantrums. I look at the ground and walk away.
That was Between Roads, written and read by Rory Bourgeois. Tonight's final story has us on the bus, where our narrator fidgets uncomfortably in his seat beside a chatty bigot who is too old to worry about what he says. Let's listen now as Rory Bourgeois reads Small Talk.
Small Talk by Rory Bourgeois. I toss my suitcase into the luggage compartment and then place a backpack filled with beer on top. I'm transferring from a GO train in Burlington onto a GO bus. I climb the stairs, show the driver my ticket to St. Catharines, and look for a seat. It's rush hour on a Friday and the bus is packed. I spot a seat in the second row from the back. A man wearing brown overalls and a jean jacket covered in white paint sits next to the open seat. He looks to be in his mid-40s with crooked teeth and stubble. As I near him, I notice the smell of construction work, a mix of dust, paint, sweat, and coffee. I give him a nod and sit down beside him. I pull out my BlackBerry and type a few words into a dumb tweet when the man looks over and says, "You're pretty fast with that thing, eh?" "Yeah, I waste a lot of time with it, I guess." He laughs. "Waste a lot of time," he says. I smile. "Yeah, I've got one of those flip phones still," he continues. "I don't know how to use that shit. I found one of those smartphones before, took it home, then the police showed up in my house. They got a tracker on them, eh?" "Yeah, some do." "Yeah, the cops say, 'Do you have a phone?' I go, 'Yeah, I got a fucking phone. I found it. Haven't even used it yet. Take the fucking thing.' They ask me how I got it. I tell them again, 'I found it. Fucker left his phone lying in the street.'" "Yeah, man, they'll do that," I chuckle. Students with headphones around their ears and phones out sit around us, probably also going home for the weekend. As we inch past McMaster University building in Hamilton, the man asks, "So where are you coming from?" "I go to U of T. I got a buddy with a birthday back home tonight." He leans back, "Oh, you're smart, eh? A lot of Orientals at Brock, is it like that there?" I laugh and look around before I answer. "Yeah, there are a lot of Asians at my school, I guess. Probably more than Brock." "Oh, fuck, eh?" he says. "Well, I guess they study. You play any sports?" "Yeah, man. I play hockey," I open up. "Just club this year, but it's still contact, so I still get to hit." "Get to hit, eh?" he answers loudly. "Fucking right. Good for you. That's what it's all about." "I'm with you, buddy," I respond. As we pass over the Burlington Skyway, the man pipes up again. "Whereabouts in St. Catharines are you from?"
"Port Dalhousie."
"Fucking right. I used to have a boat down there. Shitty old thing with big fucking speakers. We called it the party boat. Got an article in the Standard about it one time. A drunk guy fell off and died."
A guy died?" I say, and look up.
"Yeah, man. Fell off and drowned. Was drunk. Great speakers on the thing, and we blasted it. I'm sure you heard it if you're ever down on the pier."
"Sounds like a good boat," I say, confused.
"Yeah, man, great boat. You ever listen to that coon music? Love cranking that shit when I'm drunk."
"Yeah, man, I like rap," I say. I notice looks from a few of the young ladies sitting nearby. Shit.
"Did I say something wrong here?" he asks. "You're not one of those sensitive types, are you? I've got a mulatto kid, tries to fight me when I call him boy. It's those fucking movies."
"No, man. I'm alright," I say.
"Okay," he nods. We pass the sign to Stony Creek and the man asks my major in university. "Political science," I tell him. "Oh, yeah," he says. "Those politicians, they're fucking us with tax, eh? It's all those people dependent on government."
"Yeah, man. Lots of tax, I guess. I don't know."
"Yeah, it's those dependents," he continues. "All I'm saying is, if your dog's retarded, what do? You shoot it. Why should I pay tax to keep these people alive?" I tense up. I look at my phone. I look around. I fidget in my seat. I hope the surrounding people don't associate his opinion with me. I see four or five people turn their heads back around.
"I don't know, man."
He backs off with what seems like genuine concern. "Oh, sorry. You don't have a brother with it or something, do you?"
"No, man, but we're not exactly alone here. A lot of people are listening. I think this is a conversation better left for private."
"Oh, yeah, they're all listening, eh?" he says.
Ah, whatever. I don't give a shit. I'm too old. I say what I want to say. But I don't want to bring you into it. We'll talk about something else. You're not fat. You got a girlfriend? No, man. Not right now. I smile. The surrounding students look back at their phones. As we pass the old burnt ship, he pipes up again. What bar are you going to tonight? The Pepper, I answer. He agrees. Maybe if I was younger, eh? As we pass the stone sign to St. Catherine's, I text my sister. The man phones his wife. Says he'll be there in 5.
That was Small Talk, written and read by Rory Bourgeois. That concludes Life Rattle number 1264. My name is Lori Callis. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Achtman. Tune in next week to hear stories by new Life Rattle writer, Samantha Ashenhurst.